evening, and welcome to Good Evening, the Alfred Hitchcock Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Shamutella, and joining me, as always, are my ever-constant co-hosts, Chris Haig and Tom Caldwell. Tom, how are you doing today? You know, you probably should be paying attention to pumping that gas. I know that there's birds coming all over your head there, right? They're flying around and pecking at you and whatnot, but be careful. Gas is flying.
If I want to smoke a cigar while I'm putting gas in a car, that's my right as a gun-toting liberal American. You can't tell me what to
do. Gun-toting liberal American. I think that's like a contradiction, but I don't know. Maybe it's not.
I don't know. Cigars. There have been a lot of birds around lately.
Yes. Chris, quit freaking out or I'm going to slap you.
I will, I promise. But you lost me. Well, the birds coming all over you.
Oh, dear, that sounded nastier than I wanted it to be. Chris, shame on you.
Sorry, I can't help it. I think they're evil. Evil!
They're evil. Evil! There, I just slapped you.
God, so, I needed that.
Welcome to our discussion on The Birds, which we covered about 18 months ago on an audio commentary, about a year and a half ago in summer of 2020. We are going to be just discussing the movie, kind of like we've already done with Psycho and North by Northwest, where we previously had a commentary, and now it's our main episode discussion. Now, this is my favorite Hitchcock film and still holds up as my favorite. I love this movie. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to discussing here. Which one of you guys has the summary? Tom, take it away.
Melanie Daniels meets Mitch Brenner in a San Francisco pet store and decides to follow him home. She brings with her the gift of two lovebirds, and they strike up a romance. One day, birds start attacking children at Mitch's sister's party, and a huge assault starts on the town by attacking birds. Caw, caw.
Okay, The Birds is a 1963 American... It's interesting, Wikipedia calls it a natural horror thriller film produced and directed by Alfred Hitchcock. So if this is a natural horror film, would you lump The Happening in with this movie as like a sequel to this?
I don't consider it a film, so...
You don't consider this film or The Happening?
The Happening.
Loosely based on the 1952 story of the same name by Daphne du Maurier, The Birds focuses on a series of sudden and unexplained violent bird attacks on the people of Bodega Bay, California, over the course of a few days. The film stars Rod Taylor and Tippi Hedren in her screen debut alongside Jessica Tandy, Suzanne Pleshett, and Veronica Cartwright. The screenplay is by Evan Hunter, who was told by Hitchcock to develop new characters and a more elaborate plot while keeping du Maurier's title and concept of unexplained bird attacks. I've not read this story, so I wonder, it sounds like it's probably not very close to the adaptation. It's just like a loose adaptation, sounds like.
Yeah.
In 2016, The Birds was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant by the United States Library of Congress and selected for preservation in its National Film Registry. Released on March 28, 1963, it has a running time of 119 minutes and grossed $11.4 million on a $3.3 million budget.
Wow.
Now, The Birds was partly inspired by the true events of a mass bird attack on the seaside town of Capitola in California on August 18, 1961, when Capitola residents awoke to a scene that seemed straight out of a horror movie. Hordes of seabirds were dive-bombing their homes, crashing into cars, and spewing half-digested anchovies onto lawns. Alfred Hitchcock heard of this event and used it as research material for his film, which was then in progress. The real cause of the birds' behavior was toxic algae, but that was not known back in the 60s. The majority of the birds seen in the film are real, although it is estimated that more than $200,000 was spent on the creation of mechanical birds for the film. Ray Berwick was in charge of the live birds used in the production, training and catching many of them himself. The gulls were caught in the San Francisco garbage dump, and the sparrows were caught by John Bud Cardos. However, the captured sparrows had to be used alongside birds from pet shops to achieve full effect in the scene where they invade the house. Hitchcock decided to do without any conventional incidental score, and instead he made use of sound effects and sparse source music in counterpoint to calculated silences. He wanted to use the electroacoustic mixture trotonium to create the bird calls and noises. devices. He had first encountered this predecessor to the synthesizer on Berlin radio in the late 20s. It was invented by Friedrich Trautwein and further developed by Oscar Sala into the Trautonium, which would create some of the bird sounds for the film. The director commissioned Sala and Remy Gassman to design an electronic soundtrack. They are credited with the electronic sound production and composition, and Hitchcock's previous musical collaborator Bernard Herrmann is credited as the sound consultant. Source music includes the first of Claude Debussy's Deux Arabesques, which Tippi Hedren's character plays on piano, and Nickety Nackety Now 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 by folk musician Chubby Parker, which is sung by the school children. Which is, as we remember, Pat McFadden's favorite song of all time. Remember how much he told us he loved it?
It's a haunting, haunting melody.
Yes. Hitchcock's cameo happens pretty early in the film. We see him walking out of the bird shop with his two dogs that he likes. What kind of dogs, Tom?
Jeepers. I did the whole interview. I forget. Tell me.
Terriers? Some kind of terrier, wasn't it? Scottish Terriers?
Oh, we did it. Yeah, we early in our series we interviewed some trainers.
Mm-hmm. You look that up. You look that up while I go over the actors.
I need to come to the pre-production meeting. Sorry.
Okay, so covering a couple of the actors here. So Rod Taylor was an Australian actor. He appeared in more than 50 films, including The Time Machine, 101 Dalmatians, The Birds, and Inglourious Basterds from 2009. I was floored because once I heard it, I realized. I recognize Rod Taylor's voice from 101 Dalmatians, so that's pretty cool. Taylor was born in Lidcombe, a suburb of Sydney, to a father who was a steel construction contractor and commercial artist, and a mother who was a children's author. He began taking art classes in high school and continued in college. He decided to become an actor after seeing Laurence Olivier in an Old Vic touring performance of Richard III. His first film role was a reenactment of Charles Sturt's voyage down the Murrumbidgee and Murray Rivers, playing Sturt's offsider George McClay. At the time, he was also appearing in a number of theatre productions for Australia's Mercury Theatre. He made his feature film debut in the Australian Lee Robinson film King of the Coral Seas in 1954. He soon started acting in television films such as Studio 57, where he played multiple different characters. And he started to gain popularity after starring in The Time Machine in 1960 as H. George Wells. He later starred in the Disney film 101 Dalmatians as Pongo. In one of the most famous roles, he played Mitch Brenner in The Birds, directed by Hitchcock. By the late 90s, Taylor had moved into semi-retirement. His final film role was in Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds in 2009, portraying fictionalized versions of Winston Churchill in a cameo. Now, this is his only Hitchcock appearance. Natalie Kay Tippi Hedren is an American actress, animal rights activist, and former fashion model. She achieved worldwide recognition for her work in two of Alfred Hitchcock's classics, The Birds and Marnie. Hedren is noted as one of the most famous Hitchcock blondes and is now one of the last surviving stars from the golden age of Hollywood cinema. A successful fashion model who appeared on the front covers of Life and Glamour magazines, among others, Hedren became an actress after she was discovered by Hitchcock while appearing on a television commercial in 1961. She achieved great praise for her work in his two films, and she won a Golden Globe for The Birds and the psychological drama Marnie. She appeared in over 80 films and television shows, including Charlie Chaplin's final film, A Countess from Hong Kong, the political satire Citizen Ruth, and the existential comedy I Heart Huckabees in 2004. Among other honors, her contributions to world cinema have been recognized with the Jules Verne Award and a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Hedren's strong commitment to animal rescue began in 1969 while she was shooting two films in Africa and was introduced to the plight of African lions. In an attempt to raise awareness for wildlife, she spent over a decade bringing Roar to the screen, and that came out in 1981. She started her own nonprofit organization, the Roar Foundation, in 1983, and it supports Shambhala Preserve, an 80-acre wildlife habitat that enables her to continue her work in the care and preservation of lions and tigers. Hedren has also set up relief programs worldwide following earthquakes, hurricanes, famine, and war. She was also instrumental in the development of Vietnamese-American nail salons. Now, Tippi Hedren, we will see her once again in Marnie, and she was also in a remake of Shadow of a Doubt, and she appears in The Birds 2, Land's End. So that's quite the interesting career for her. I think it's interesting that she's in a Hitchcock remake. Jessica Tandy was a British actress, and Tandy appeared in over 100 stage productions and had more than 60 roles in film and TV, receiving an Academy Award and 4 Tony Awards, a BAFTA, a Golden Globe Award, and a Primetime Emmy Award. She acted as Blanche DuBois in the original Broadway production of A Streetcar Named Desire in 1948, and her films including The Birds and The Gin Game. At 80, she became the oldest actress to receive the Academy Award for Best Actor for her role in Driving Miss Daisy. While this is her only Hitchcock film appearance, she is in 3 episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents: Toby, The Glass Eye, and The Canary Sedan. Suzanne Pleshette was an American theater, film, and television voice actress. Pleshette started her career in the theater and began appearing in films in the late 50s and later appeared in prominent films such as Rome Adventure and Spirited Away in 2001. She later appeared in various television productions, often in guest roles, and played Emily Hartley on The Bob Newhart Show from 1972 until 1978, receiving several Emmy Award nominations for her work. She continued acting until 2004, which was 4 years before her death at age 70. And while this is her only Hitchcock film appearance, she is in the episode Alfred Hitchcock Presents Hitchhike, which I have not seen. And last but not least, we'll touch on Veronica Cartwright, just because I love her so much in Alien. She's a British-born American actress who has worked mainly in U.S. film and television in a career spanning 6 decades. As a child actress, she appeared in supporting roles in The Children's Hour and The Birds. She is best known for her roles in the 70s science fiction films Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Alien, winning a Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actress for the latter. In the 80s, she appeared in The Right Stuff and The Witches of Eastwick. In the 90s, she received 3 Emmy nominations as Outstanding Guest Actress in a Drama Series for her roles on the television series ER and The X-Files. And while this is her only Hitchcock film appearance, she is in 2 episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents: The Schartz Metterklum Method and Summer Shade. And that's my notes. So let's jump into our discussion on the film. Now, I did rewatch this because I love this movie, and any chance I can have to rewatch The Birds, I'm definitely going to be taking, because it's a lot of fun. I think it's a great movie. And every time I watch it, I love it, except for 2 things, and they're the same 2 things that I mentioned in the commentary. It's the dummy birds going left and right when she's driving real fast, and it's that sequence where the gas is on fire, and it just has that pause of her face, and it cuts back, and she doesn't move. It's just those kind of static shots of her face. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, when I took this film in film studies at university, like, the professor, like, singled that out as one of the greatest things ever, and I don't know, I just think it's just dumb. I don't like it at all when he does that. So, who am I to question the Grandmaster's work, but I just don't like that sequence at all. So, I don't know. You guys change your mind on that? What do you think about that, those two moments?
I think they are elements which are, it's sort of that goofiness, and it's the early horror style, because this was done in 1963, so it was back when sort of darker horror was only just starting to become a bit more mainstream. But to be honest, they don't detract really from this film. If anything, they sort of give it a bit of, there's like a tiny little bit of silliness or campiness to it, which I enjoy, because at the end of the day, it is a film about a load of birds that decide to attack humans. And I don't think you can treat it that seriously. I think you've got to kind of go in and just go, right, we are here to have a bit of fun and to enjoy this kind of very high concept premise. So they don't bother me. It's a bit like noticing, you know, oh, well, when he slammed the door, it wobbled. Yeah, because it's made of plastic. It's not a real door. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I can live with it, because what makes the bird so good is the way it really does play with the senses, you know, by having minimal music, or by, you know, even using sound just as one of the senses. You know, you get the sequences with the the playground scene where the children are singing, and slowly the birds start arriving in clumps and ever so slowly, and then as they finish singing, she turns around, and it's just one of the coolest sequences I think Hitchcock ever put to film. So, no, the silly things don't really bother me, because the rest of it is just so cool and scary and cutting edge of it and of its time that, yeah, I just enjoy it. I think it's a blast.
And there really is never any explanation for why the birds are attacking, and we don't need an explanation. We can just enjoy the horror or the fear or the panic surrounding this invasion of birds.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
We can enjoy that without... We don't have to solve it.
The
right?
scariest things are when you don't know why. So, you know, Michael Myers is never scarier than when he's just killing for no reason. You know, the more you're trying to dig into the backstory and try and give a reason, it takes away the power of it in a horror film. So, yeah. The birds are attacking because the birds are attacking. That's it. That's all you need to know. And it makes it such... Because they can't be reasoned with, they can't be tricked, they can't be threatened. They can only be fought or evaded. So, yeah, I completely agree.
What if they... Do you think if they had given them some extra, you know, bird seed, like some sunflower seeds and whatnot, they might have stopped attacking them?
Do you know, I'm...
They were hangry?
I don't know why I'm imagining this as like an Animal Farm thing, and there's one bird with a monocle that's their leader, and he's like, we shall negotiate for the planet. More
birds. If there was only a big rig full of Snickers bars crashing on the highway, it would have solved the whole thing.
There you go. I think it's very brave of the film to not have a definitive conclusion. I think that's a very fascinating thing to do in the early 60s. Mm. Because the tendency is to have like some type of a closure.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I didn't really like the abrupt ending in Vertigo, it does give closure to the characters, right? Like... But this one here, there is no closure. Is this going to keep going? Is this done? What's going to happen tomorrow? You know, like, I love these kind of post-apocalyptic things, and it's almost like this could, in this day and age, this could almost have been like the first two or three episodes of a Netflix series, right? And the rest of it is what happens afterwards, investigating the birds. Like, this could turn into like... Like, without sounding ridiculous, like The Walking Dead, where it's like, you know, the birds have attacked everybody, and then now we have to deal with life where the birds are attacking people, right? And that could just go on forever.
I'm going to say, it's basically a zombie movie in a way. You're being attacked by something which doesn't think, it just wants to kill you. So, yeah, you know, and I'm not putting this out there into the universe. We got close when there were rumours of Michael Bay going to remake it, and fortunately, he's not. It doesn't need remaking, it's fine, but if they were to adapt
Michael Bay wanted to remake The Birds.
Yeah, that was back in 2012, I think the rumours were. He said, oh, I really wanted to adapt it for a modern audience, and I'm like, oh, no thanks.
Like, those birds would be driving, like, tanks... explosions as birds would be blowing up.
Yeah.
Like, that would not be a good thing.
It'd be the first time you would see, like, a bird with visible boobs.
Yeah.
There would be, like, let's somehow sexually objectify one bird so you know it's the female bird. So, right. But no, I think, yeah, exactly. You could, you know, create an entire miniseries sort of Midnight Mass style, where it starts off slowly on this, you know, this island or this remote community, and by the end of it, the birds are descending, and it's scary and terrifying. But yeah, I mean, it almost feels, in the way that it doesn't have a resolved ending, it almost feels a bit like Hitch is picking up some of the influence from the sort of the new wave, the French new wave that was hitting, you know, cinemas at the time, where there are no easy conclusions, there is no kind of happy, tidy ending at the end. So, yeah, I think it was very bold and brave. You know, even ones like you mentioned, like Vertigo, is shocking, but it does resolve the mystery. It does go, right, his arc is cured because he's been cured of his fear of heights, and the mystery is solved, and technically one of the wrong people has been punished. In Psycho, you know, they've discovered the mystery, and the monster, quote-unquote, is locked away and all that sort of thing. This is different. It, you know, the threat is still out there. It's not been neutralized. It's something which is still terrifying. You know, at the very end shots, you see them get in the car, and there's like a little bit of sunlight, which I don't know if that's supposed to be like, oh, it's, you know, there's a bit of hope, or that, you know, they're alive and the birds are just watching them. But it doesn't say that the world's going to get back to normal. It doesn't say that at all. So, yeah, I think it's such a bold ending for Hitchcock.
Just leaves it open, and like, he specifically didn't put the end at the end on screen at the end, because there, it's not the end. There is more story there. So I can't wait to see how it turns out in The Birds 2, Land's End.
Two birds, two birds, two furious.
Two birds, two gulls. Something
like that. So. Birdier. So, Brandon, you talk about how this is such a favorite of yours, and it really is a standout film in Hitch's very, very long list of productions. I think it's a popular favorite, it's a critical favorite, and it really defines to me what a summer blockbuster movie is. When we were starting our podcast and we talked about doing the Listen Live commentaries every summer, I think this was a really obvious choice, because there's so much involved in the film. There's so much you can talk about, so much you can enjoy. It really stands the test of time. Like, it really allows you to watch it over and over again. And it is, again, one of those films that not only, like, anybody that's a film fan has seen this movie and they know this movie. There's a lot more obscure Hitchcock films that people don't know and they haven't seen. But this is a very popular film that everybody knows about and most people have seen. And it really is a standout production within Hitchcock's filmography.
See, the thing is, though, I'm not sure what the general audience thinks of it. Like, on Letterboxd, for instance, like, I give this a 5 rating. But the average rating on Letterboxd is 3.7, which is kind of low. You know, like, that's basically, most people are doing 3.5 on this thing, right, when you think about it. You know, like, a movie like Psycho has an average rating of 4.3, which is, like, quite a bit higher, right? And even if we looked up Vertigo, like, Vertigo has a has an average rating of 4.2. Like, that's quite a bit higher as an average, right? To be a whole half a star up higher. So I don't know if The Birds has the same appeal to the general audience as it does for the Hitchcock fans. Like, I know that when I first saw this movie, I didn't like it. I thought it was too long. I thought it was boring. I mean, we studied it in film school, and we studied it quite a bit. But there's a lot of excess stuff in the film that could be trimmed out, but I don't want it trimmed out. But it makes it feel natural. Like, when she's talking with the guy looking for the directions to the Brenner house, like, that banter back and forth feels very real to me, right? Where he's distracted on the phone, he's talking to the guy in the store, they don't know the girl's name, right? They're convinced they know the name. Oh, if you want this information, go up to the teacher who's over here. You know, that banter back and forth in the restaurant after the attack, where they're talking to each other, like, this all feels very realistic to me. The mother with her two kids getting agitated by the situation, you know, people are talking over each other. You got the crazy guy who keeps thinking that it's the end of the world and whatnot. Like, this all feels so very realistic to me. And that's what, I don't want any of this cut out. And that's why I appreciate it so much, is because it feels like a chunk of life.
And it helps ground the film, like, you know, in this high concept thing of, oh, well, the birds are attacking people, by grounding this stuff early on and making you go, well, these are real people. This could be anywhere. And, you know, it transplants, because the original setting of the book is like an English village. And it's been moved over to the California coast, because DeMario was English, and so it's set in, I want to say Dorset? I don't think, I've not read the original story, but I swear it's set in, like, Cornwall, or it's set in Dorset, somewhere down south in England. But yeah, doing that transplant thing, it still makes it feel like it's a genuine, these are just regular people, they have nothing to do whatsoever with the birds, they haven't started this, they haven't kicked it off, you know, they just happen to be our point of view when viewing this. So, yeah, you know, and having the stuff the conversations, or, you know, having, like, the minutiae of, you know, the birthday party, the, you know, the diner where, you know, we go initially And then we circle back for a much bigger piece towards the sort of end of the second act of the film. Yeah, by making these people real, it does help ground it, and you do start to feel a lot more for them, because at the time it got mixed reviews. I think people were saying, oh, well, it's quite silly, it's quite campy, it's quite whatever, but I think we can look on it now and go, well, it's actually interesting character study in how people react to tragedy. You know, at the time, the book was, or the story was considered an allegory for World War II, in terms of, you know, these things are coming out of the sky and they are killing indiscriminately, and people are just kind of at a loss for what to do during the Blitz, during the Blitz in sort of London and the UK at the time. And you do get that sense with Hitchcock's directing, where, you know, everyone is panicking, everyone is taking shelter, and while they're trying to work out the problem, there's division between people. You know, you've got the ornithologist who's trying to be helpful, but then you've got the hysterical mother who, rather than thinking, oh, it's a scientific reason, she starts to think it's either a curse from God or that Melanie has somehow brought this sort of plague upon them. So as a character study, I think it's just, it's one of the most interesting ones that we haven't seen from Hitchcock, actually, since maybe Lifeboat, in terms of people coming together and fighting. And it's almost like a play in itself.
Do you guys have one image or one moment in the film that really has stuck with you over the years, or that really impresses you? For me, it's got to be Melanie in her fur coat on the rowing the boat across the bay to Mitch's house. Like, that's just a funny scene. But is there any, like, it doesn't have to be significant or whatever, but is there any particular moment that it just really has entertained you?
My favorite shot in the film, I think, is right after the gas tank and whatnot explodes, the vehicle explodes, and you get that really high angle of the village with those seagulls kind of flying in front of the camera, and it's just quiet, and you're just looking at the anarchy that's going on and having these birds fly in front of the camera. I love that moment so much. I think it's brilliant.
Chris, is there a moment that sticks in your sticks beak? In
Sticks in your caw.
Oh my god. So there's one shot, which is when Melanie is exploring the house. Everyone's gone to sleep. It's like the last 10 minutes of the film, and Melanie decides to go explore because she thinks she hears something upstairs, and she opens one of the doors, and it's just, she turns in a particular angle, and it's the birds, and it's just this, Tippi Hedren has this incredible look of horror on her face, and it's reflected actually in what is probably my favourite, like, 2 seconds of the film, which is when Melanie is sat outside the school, and she's been sort of noticing birds, and then she turns, and they're all on sort of like the jungle gym. They're on the playground equipment. And that, for me, is truly chilling, because there's no music, there's no sort of building of suspense. Oh, there is building suspense, but not through music. All you hear is children. All that, yeah. That is just, I think it's so fundamentally creepy, but I love it so much. And yeah, it is really funny that, you know, she's there in the back seat with a pair of lovebirds, and it's a very fun film, and it's a really good thriller with a lot of great visuals. Oh, actually, that's one as well. That shot where it's like the overhead of Bodega Bay, which is it's an oil painting. I think that's genius. You know, where it's like the fire and everything.
Oh,
I think that's so cool.
It's such a fascinating premise, because it's like, when did this all start? Like, when you think about the movie, did it start at the beginning? Like, because we see those birds when she's in the city, what is it, San Francisco or whatever the city is that she starts in, you know, and it's like, is it starting then? Like, are we supposed to think that upon rewatches, that this is when the birds are starting to act strange? Is the bird acting strange when she takes it out of the cage and it flies away? Right? Is that supposed to be a sequence when you're questioning how the birds are reacting and whatnot? Why don't the lovebirds get affected by it, right? Because the chickens are affected, you know, like which things are affected and what things are not affected, you know. So
we always have the reference to the turning point in the movie when she is taking her rowboat back to Bodega Bay from Mitch's house, and she gets pecked in the head, and she bleeds. And that, as we talked about in our commentary, is considered the turning point where the film flips from being a lighthearted sort of romantic film, almost a comedy at the beginning, and that's the moment when it turns into a horror film. Because she's been unceremoniously bitten or attacked or scratched for no good reason.
You know what I would love to see that I think would be like a marvelous double feature would be this paired with Jaws.
Ooh.
I think that'd be a fantastic double feature because, you know, you got that mindless animal that's attacking and both are in like these seaside towns and whatnot. I don't know. I think that'd be a pretty powerful doubleheader.
Yeah, I suppose that's what it means because you mentioned in the Wikipedia that it's called a natural horror or a natural disaster sort of horror thing. And I'm like, yeah. I'm genuinely trying to wrap my brain as well, thinking, what other... Like, there was that weird one with the sheep back in the 2000s, but I can't think of any more sort of animals go rogue as a horror premise.
Well, I know you don't like it, but I think that definitely The Happening would fall into that category, right? So that'd be another one.
Oh, God, I haven't seen it in, like, 5 years. It's like Spores? It's like Nature? Yeah.
Yeah, nature, the leaves are making people go crazy and commit suicide and whatnot.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Maybe like Triffids?
While we're sort of on the topic, if you don't mind, I mentioned this, I found it today. Kaw, spelt K-A-W, is a 2007 American made-for-television horror film. And directed by Sheldon Wilson. Premiered in 2007 on the Sci-Fi Channel. It's considered a similar story to The Birds. Basically, mad cow disease gets into the bird population. That might be an interesting follow-up. I just wanted to mention it because I love saying the phrase caw.
Caw.
And it's hard to say caw without kind of singing it a little bit. You can't just say caw, like it doesn't work right.
Caw!
Oh, you sound like a posh British person saying car. Where's the car?
Yeah. Bring the car around, shall you?
Excellent.
But no, that I think if I had to pick one moment that gives me PTSD in the film, or makes me kind of shudder, is when the children cannot get from out of the schoolhouse because of the birds, and they're running down the street, and they're just being bombarded and everywhere. That's the part that really, really sends the message home of what they're up against.
Mm-hmm.
What the panic is, what the uncomfortable nature of this bird attack is all about right there. That was very well done. And it's interesting, too, because, like, you know, if this was a modern production, it would have all been digital birds, right? Like, it would all have been CGI. And they really were fighting a battle where they had to use puppets or in-camera tricks or real birds. And, like, the combination, like, the special effects were not an easy task in this film. And they really went to a lot of work to pull that off.
Going back to what I was saying there about the realistic nature of the story, too, is like it's more than just what's happening between the birds and humanity, right? Like, there are so many character moments as well. Like, with, you know, the teacher Annie Hayworth there, you know, having that past relationship with Mitch Brenner, we get all this interesting backstory to Tippi Hedren's character about how she's kind of been like this out-of-control teen or whatever, you know, her past life and whatnot, and how she's trying to change her life, but, you know, because her dad's in newspapers, she keeps getting brought to the fore attention, the foreground. It enhances the movie so much because it expands it and we get to know these characters more than I think a movie like this normally allows for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the thing as well. It allows for those complicated dynamics in terms of, like, Melanie and Annie, who, you know, they share a romantic partner in a sense. You know, Mitch and Annie were together and it's ended, and it's weird because I think you're supposed to, Annie set up in a way because most of these characters aren't in the original book from what I'm aware of, and so, you know, they've been developed and to give it a you know, a sort of romantic tension. But Melanie and Annie, even though they're framed as romantic rivals, treat each other quite well. They're quite respectful. They're quite... There's no real cattiness or infighting or insulting. It's just that kind of weird acknowledgement of, oh, I was with someone for a while, and now they moved on, and I've met their new sort of love interest. But, it you know, they're not playing it in terms of, you know, Annie being particularly jealous or anything. It's just the way that things are. And I think that was a really interesting dynamic. And you've got the dynamics then of sort of like Melanie with Mitch's mother, who he's sort of really close to, and with his sort of, you know, Veronica Cartwright's character. And so she's playing off all these different dynamics, and Mitch is like in a family of, or in a bubble of very opinionated women. I think it's just really interesting and fun for them to bounce off. And then you get fun stuff like not my favourite Hitchcock character of all time, definitely my favourite in the film, is the ornithologist, who I think is just great. I think she's so fun, and it's such a great bit of character acting, where she basically not really defends the birds, but she kind of explains, well, they've been around here for millions of years.
Oh yeah.
So if anything, we've trespassed onto their world. It doesn't really belong to us. And there's, you know, billions of birds and everything, and she just kind of... I just think it's just a great... And she's only really in two or three scenes, and then she disappears after the diner scene. But yeah, I just think little moments like that, or the drunk guy who's like, it's the end of the world! And it's just, you know, fun character stuff, which is what Hitchcock's really good at, is populating these worlds with characters who, in a different Hitchcock movie, might have been the star of their own drama.
Awesome. Well, Tom, is there anything else you want to talk about for the film here?
I'm good. And, you know, like we in our pre-production chatter before we taped today's episode, we were saying, you know, we don't really have to go super deep into the film today because we have already got the commentary, which was episode 46 from August of 2020, that our listeners can enjoy if they haven't already heard it. So we don't need to beat this bird to death today. Mm-hmm. But I would just recommend this. I think it's a great, you know, kind of a cliche phrase that I use a lot on our show. If you're only going to watch a couple of Hitchcock films, this is an important one to watch. And chances are you've seen it already because it's very popular, and I do recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Chris, any final thoughts?
No, like Tom said, it's a lot of what we discussed as we were watching the film. It's available in our commentary, which I would heartily recommend you check out because it's really fun. But yeah, this is a film that started off with mixed reviews, and it's kind of been critically reappraised over the years, and I think that's totally fair. I think it's a very important film. I think it's a fantastic horror film, and I think it's a film that if you've not watched Hitchcock, you should absolutely watch it. But if you consider yourself a horror fan and you've never seen it, I would heartily recommend you check it out because it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Right on. Okay, so how would you rate this, Chris?
I will give it 5 out of 5 paper plates of ruined food at that kid's party.
Tom?
I'll give it 5 out of 5 shelves full of Canadian Club whiskey in that bar. Why do they have so many bottles of Canadian Club? Maybe they need to drink to get through the weekend with all those bird attacks.
That's good stuff. Excellent. And I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 pecks to the head. So, that's what I'll give it here. So, excellent. Right on. Tom, where can people find you when you're not buying lovebirds to drive all the way up to your love interest who's staying with her family?
My most recent distraction on social media is on the TikTok, as the kids call it. I'm setting new ground as DJ Tommy 3000. Mm-hmm. And man, I've got some amazing content, some little funny videos on there, so check it out.
Excellent. Chris, where can people find you when you're not misremembering the little girl's name?
No, because I genuinely can't remember what her name is.
It's definitely Susan.
Susan? Sally? Yeah. Susie? Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @higher_boy, where I will just be chatting about bits and pieces. I am set to appear as a regular recurring co-host on Mild Threat and Peril, and I'm a regular panelist on the Fringe podcast, Observing the Pattern. So you can check those out wherever you get podcasts. And yeah, just say hi on Twitter. It'll be nice to chat.
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. I got a couple other podcasts called Infinite Diversity, which is all about new Star Trek, and a show called Franchise Fatigue, which is all about movies, remakes, and sequels. And we're currently going through the Scream movies, so we're having a lot of fun over there. Have you seen Scream 5 yet, Chris?
I'm not even joking. I took time out during my workday to go see it. So I worked until 10:30 in the morning, said, I'll be back in a few hours, went, saw it, because I knew for a fact... I'm not even kidding, because I knew someone will spoil it. Someone will put it on Twitter. And I was like, I'm going to go. So I went, watched it, was thrilled. It's so good. And I will be happily listening to the Franchise Fatigue ones, because I'm intrigued to know your thoughts on my favourite horror franchise.
Nice.
And then I came back to work, and they went, was everything okay? And I think they thought I had like a doctor's appointment, or like a job interview. And I've never told them that, like, oh no, I just actually went to see a movie.
Hopefully none of your coworkers listen to this.
You've got popcorn, and you're like, oh,
I'm still working virtually, so I just kind of logged in, and I was like, oh, yeah, everything's great. And I just, yeah, no, it, yes, I
it's all good.
Love it. It's great. I have many, many thoughts, so, yeah.
I'm excited to check it out. I'm looking forward to it. I love the screen movies.
I mean, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I think you will enjoy it, because...
I love all of them so far. The first four, I think they're all great. I don't dislike any of them, so I'm sure
exactly.
I'll like this
one too. I'm the same thing. I will say with this one, it's now the only franchise I know where they've had at least five films and they're all great. So I'm really happy with it.
Excellent. Right on. Awesome. Well, thank you very much to our friends Annie and Catherine. Be sure to check out their show, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock Presents podcast. Thank you very much to the Fandom Podcast Network for hosting our show. We have our episodes in their feed as well as our own independent feed. Jason Cullimore, definitely got to thank him for his wonderful theme music for our show. Well, that's all we got for you this week. Next week, we'll be back with another episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. No, I'm just kidding. We're all done, those. We're all done. So you're going to get a nice couple of breaks off, and we'll see you again when we cover Marnie in March. Until then, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.